Well, we want to wish you a very happy Easter. And in fact, we're so excited to celebrate not just with our church family, but with the global church around the world, followers of Jesus, all calling on Jesus as Lord, celebrating the greatest day in the history of the world, the resurrection of God's Son, Jesus Christ. Hey, would you do it with me? Would you say, I'm going to say, He is risen. Would you just say it back wherever you are, He is risen indeed. You ready? He is risen. Okay. All right, I've got a feeling that some of you didn't do it, or you didn't do it with a lot of energy. So let's try it again, because this is an amazing day that we're celebrating. He is risen! He is risen indeed. Well, many of you probably heard the story of Kayla Montgomery on ESPN a while ago. Man, she was an amazing runner, and anybody could see that watched her run. I mean, she had a long stride, a steady gait, and an incredible determination. In fact, she won match after match, victory after victory. And in fact, getting the accolades and the attention of coaches around the nation. But anybody that watched Kayla run probably had no idea that she was running with no feeling from the waist down. She was 14 years old and she got the diagnosis of MS. And what would happen is because of the disease, as she would run, her body temperature would increase and it would kick, the disease would kick into overdrive. And from about mile on, she would have no feeling in her legs whatsoever. And so she would run and it was almost like she was on autopilot, just running on sheer momentum. Incredible. But she loved to run. In fact, she told her coach, she said, I want to run and I want to run fast. That's exactly what she did. At one time, she was ranked number 21 in the nation. Now, for Kayla, running was not an issue. She could run fast. For Kayla, the issue was stopping. She would run, but she had no ability to decelerate. And for that, she relied exclusively on her coach. Now, her coach was a constant fixture at her races, always cheering her on, encouraging her, yelling, prodding her on. But most of all, her coach was there catching Kayla. She would come around the last bend of the lap, and her coach would always be waiting there at the finish line to catch her. And it was no small crash. She couldn't slow down, and he didn't move, and there would be a collision. And when he was finally able to slow Kayla down, he would pick up her 5-foot, 1-inch frame and carry her to a safe place. And people would often be able to hear Kayla crying out, my legs, I can't feel my legs. To which her coach would respond, it's okay, Kayla, I've got you. They had an agreement. She would run fast and he would catch. In fact, if he wasn't there, which happened only on one occasion, she would run at full speed, and because she couldn't decelerate, she would just crash full speed into the ground. But you know, because her coach never failed her, she could have complete confidence and complete certainty that he would always catch her. I think about that word certainty. We live in an uncertain time, don't we? You think about the stock market, it's up and down. You think about the economy, it's all over the place. The job market, vacations are canceled, kids are out of school. And there's an awful lot of uncertainty that we're experiencing today. And I would imagine, at least in some measure, the disciples felt uncertainty as they moved from Friday to Saturday to Sunday. I mean, think about it. Friday was the crucifixion, and Saturday was a day of sadness. Friday was the day that the disciples ran away, and Saturday was the day that they went into hiding for fear. Friday was a day that Jesus was buried in the tomb, and Saturday was a day that he spoke not a word. Friday was the day that Jesus' biography ended just like every other human in history ends. And Saturday was a day of grief. But on Sunday, man, on Sunday. Well, let's pick up the story in John chapter 20. It goes like this. John chapter 20, verse 1. It says, early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb. Let me stop there for a moment, because John very specifically and is very clear in his language throughout his gospel. He says, while it was still dark. Now, darkness and light plays a major theme in his gospel. He starts his gospel talking about darkness and light. He ends his gospel talking about darkness and light. And darkness and light is a huge theme throughout. For John, darkness and light is much more about where the sun is at during the day. It's much more about what it looks like as you're walking throughout the day. Darkness for John is a feeling of emptiness, isolation. Darkness is a feeling of uncertainty. And so Mary Magdalene is walking to the tomb. It was dark. It's a feeling of isolation, loneliness, uncertainty. And it says she went to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the entrance. And from this point on, the story goes, it's kind of a quick flurry of action and discovery. She sees that the stone has been rolled away. She runs to tell Peter and John. And in verse 2, it says this. She said, "They've taken the Lord out of the tomb and we don't know where they've put him." Complete uncertainty. And so Peter and John, it's this comical recollection of this foot race between them. And John, who's writing his gospel, is so humbly says he won that race. And so they get to the tomb. John gets there first. He looks in, but he doesn't go in. And finally, Peter gets there. And in verse 6, it says, "Then Simon Peter, who was behind him, arrived and went into the tomb." And both Peter and John observed something very unusual. It says, he saw strips of linen lying there, as well as the burial cloth that had been around Jesus' head. The cloth was folded up by itself, separate from the linen. Now, in case you're not overly familiar with ancient Near Eastern burial customs, this was an incredibly unusual scene. In fact, we're told a little bit about what happens in the burial process a couple of verses earlier in chapter 19. Tell us about Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus. And they take Jesus' body from the cross and they bring him to the tomb. And it says, the text says that they wrap him in strips of linen that have been dipped in 75 pounds of costly ointment. Now, just as a side note, we know earlier in the gospel that 1 pound of ointment is equivalent to 1 year's worth of wages. And so think about the vast, this is a lifetime worth of wealth that's invested into the burial process of Jesus. Now, the ointment and the oils would have served two purposes. It would have served to kind of delay the smell of decay. But not only that, the oil mixed with the linens would have, after a couple hours, begin to harden, providing kind of a hard shell around Jesus' body. And so Peter looks in, he goes in, and he sees this shell, but no body. And then verse 8, it says this, "Finally, the other disciple," talking about John, "who had reached the tomb first, he also went inside, and he saw and he believed." He saw and he believed. Now, believe is another favorite word that John uses throughout his gospel. In fact, he uses the word believe in some form or another 99 times, 3 times more than Matthew, Mark, or Luke combined. It's such a prominent theme for him that he expresses explicitly that the purpose of his gospel is that everybody would hear the recount of Jesus' story and believe. It's a huge theme. And what this text is telling us is that John had been a follower, but because of what he's seeing at this point, he is now a believer. He'd been a follower, but now he's a believer. This word for believe, it's the Greek word pisteo, and it means faith or belief or trust. In fact, John, when he says and uses the word believe 99 times in his gospel, he never uses it in noun function as if a set of beliefs. He always uses it as something that starts in your mind, moves into your heart, and moves out through your actions. It's something that you believe, you trust with every fiber of your being. And what's interesting about Jesus saying that he saw and believed is that John, he didn't say this after he saw Jesus multiply the loaves and the fish in feeding the thousands of people. He didn't say that he saw and believed then. He didn't even say this when he saw Jesus walking on the water, when he calmed the raging storm. He didn't say at that moment that he saw and believed. He didn't even say that he saw and believed when he saw Jesus resurrect Lazarus from the dead. He didn't say that he saw and believed. And yet now in this moment, John says that he saw something that caused him to believe, to put his trust fully in Jesus. Think about this. He hadn't seen the resurrected body of Jesus yet. He hadn't heard the voice of the resurrected Jesus, voice of Jesus yet. So what did he see and believe? Well, let's rewind the story a little bit and look at John chapter 20, verse 5. This is the first time that John gets there. It says that John bent over and looked in at the strips of linen lying there. So he gets to the tomb. He doesn't go in, but he looks in. And the Greek word that's used for look in is the word blepe. It means to clearly see an object. And so he sees the linens there, the hardened shell, he sees it. And then in verse 8, it says, then the disciple who had reached the tomb first also went in, and he saw and believed. The first time he uses the word blepe. The second time he uses the word theori, which means to observe, to contemplate, or to scrutinize. In other words, the first time John saw the linens, the second time John understood what the linens meant. The first time he saw, but the second time he understood that Jesus' body had been there, but somehow evaporated like a sunrise mist. And John begins to process the evidence, and his mind begins to evaluate what's going on. You could imagine him thinking through the scenarios. I mean, could it be the grave robbers? No, couldn't be the grave robbers, because it's a hardened shell around Jesus' body. You couldn't remove that. You couldn't cut through it and then put it back together like it was never touched. Not only that, but grave robbers wouldn't leave 75 pounds worth of ointment and oil there for the wasting. It couldn't have been the grave robbers. And he's processing and he's thinking, it could have been one of the other disciples. No, we've all been in hiding. Everybody's in hiding for fear of being crucified like Jesus. And he begins to process, and all of a sudden, John, in a flurry of recollection, recalls all that Jesus had said over and over and over again, that Jesus said that he must be killed, and on the third day that he would rise again. And John realizes that out of the confusion of the pain comes this clarity that floods his soul and mind, and in this moment, realizes that because Jesus did what he said he would do, he must be who he says that he is. That when Jesus said that he would rise again, it was more than a prediction. It was a promise that he made good on. And in this moment, he saw and believed. In this moment, he saw and he put his trust in. And in this moment, John, seeing the casing where Jesus' body had lain, he did what Kayla Montgomery did with her coach every time she came crashing into his arms. He put his trust in Jesus. Let me ask you a question. In this season of uncertainty, where have you put your trust? You know, these are uncertain times. We don't know what will happen with the economy. We don't know what will happen with the job market. We don't know what will happen with retirement accounts. And I think in this season, there's a lot of clarity that's been given to us about where we put our trust. Many of us have put our trust in our jobs or in our accomplishments or in our relationships. And the reality is that we're all experiencing is that these are all uncertain things. But I want to remind you on this Easter morning that there is something that the resurrection reminds us, that these times are uncertain, but God is not. Everything around us is moving and changing and shaking. Times are uncertain, but God is not. That we live in uncertain times. But you don't need to live with uncertainty because of who God is. That just like what Kayla did with her coach, you can do with God. You know the one who is catching you. See, the resurrection reminds us of several things. It reminds us that not even death can separate us from God's love because Jesus has already conquered death. It reminds us that the tomb that once held Jesus' dead body became the place of resurrecting life. The place that gave birth to the question that to this day, hell hates to answer. Oh death, where is your victory? Oh death, where is your sting? You know, in these uncertain times, I think death still remains the greatest fear of mankind. But you know, it doesn't have to be your fear, because you know who is catching you. And God gives you this promise. He says that what God did to Jesus' grave, he's also going to do with your grave. And what God did with Jesus' body, he's also going to do with your body. That the one who defeated death has already defeated your death. In fact, Jesus says in John chapter 11, he says, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, even though he dies, will live. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. And because of Jesus' victory over sin and death, you can face the struggles of Friday, you can face the uncertainty of Saturday, and you can celebrate the resurrection on Sunday, because the same God that raised Jesus from the dead is giving power to your life. See, wherever you are, whatever you may be facing in this season, will you, like John, Will you, like Kayla Montgomery with her coach, will you put your trust in Jesus?